Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Captain Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every Monday to Friday from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcasts on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Francis.
How are you this morning?
I'm dynamite.
Yeah?
Yeah, doing pretty well.
I've got a bit of a chocolate hangover myself.
Yeah, those are my favorite kinds, honestly.
I was Christmas shopping yesterday, and I got pulled into Jacques Torres, where I bought some presents, and then I had some chocolates, and then I had some more chocolates, and then I had some more chocolates, and then...
Oh, what's this? A free sample?
And then...
Is this another free sample?
And then I ate one of the presents I bought for somebody.
Now I gotta go buy another present.
Jacques Torres in Manhattan, amazing chocolatier. You can go get a hot chocolate at the bar.
Great.
Or you can just buy some.
He's actually gonna be on the show Valentine's week as well.
Yeah, so he said, we asked him to be on the show, and he said, I will come on the week before Valentine's Day.
February, yeah.
I got that. I can figure that out. Well, we're not going to start today talking about chocolate. We're going to have Dana Cowan, who's the editor-in-chief of Food & Wine magazine, coming on later in the show. But I want to talk about...
Dana Cowan's going to talk about 100 Tastes to Try in the new year, 100 Tastes to Try
in 2007. That's the subject of their current issue of their magazine.
Which was a really great article they did in the December issue of Food & Wine magazine.
January issue.
I'm sorry, in the January issue. But one of the flavors that they talk about, one of the things that you have to try are maple flakes.
Made of maple syrup.
And a Canadian syrup company has made these cool little... flakes, crunchy flakes out of maple syrup.
Now,
and you can use them in recipes, or you can sprinkle them on top of ice cream.
Now, for those of you who don't know, pay attention to what's on your pancakes. Aunt Jemima is not maple syrup, it's corn syrup.
Right.
Okay?
Ain't no maple in Aunt Jemima.
Mrs. Butterworth's, ain't no butter,
ain't no
Mrs.
Ain't no Worth.
Ain't no Worth. But real maple syrup is a product that has a number of different grades to it and is really great and is somewhat expensive, but truly, truly worth it. And also actually very, very good for you as opposed to sugars and refined sugars. Now, and the high fructose corn syrup. Now, there's some news coming out of Vermont where a bunch of scientists have gotten together, and they're trying to figure out whether maples, like wine from one vineyard, tastes different than wine from another vineyard.
Even though they're exactly the same grapes in exactly the same season, they taste different.
The French call that a goût de terroir, or the taste of the place, whether maple syrup has that as well. And this is in the Times today, an article by Jane Black, who's been on our show before. She's actually the editor of Boston Magazine. But she has a piece in the Times today on maple syrup. And what they do is they've taken maple syrup from different places, different trees on different kinds of soil. Now, remember, maple trees' roots go down as deep as vines and are sometimes there for 100 years. And they believe that through subjecting this to a panel of tasters, they believe that trees that are on limestone as opposed to trees that are on what's called a schist bedrock have different flavor in the syrup that comes out of the tree.
Well, you taste it. You know that it's true. Different trees will produce a different tasting flavor of maple syrup.
Well, I think what's interesting about this study is that we've always talked about this in wine, and that wine has a sense of place that's more than how it was manufactured. It's that the grapes speak of from where they come.
Mm.
Now what they've done here that's very interesting is while we have within Vermont maple syrup, you have different varieties from the fancy syrup, which is the clearest and thinnest, followed by grade A, which is medium, grade A dark amber, which is a darker one, and then the grade B has the strongest flavor and is the least refined. But within those grades, are there different maple syrups from different places? And they say, yes. Here's a quote from one of the participants. I was astonished at the differences, said one person who attended, a woman named Kim Borsavage, who owns a bed and breakfast near Shelburne, Vermont. Ms. Borsavage said she preferred the syrup from the limestone bedrock, a good thing, she said, because that's what is around her. And she said she was put off, though, by the moldy and dirty taste of a syrup that came from trees grown on schist. Now, you might think, hogwash, right? It's just someone's fantasy.
You also might think that you know you're going to become accustomed to the taste that you're used to. So she is probably more likely to enjoy the maple syrup from the air, from the trees that are in her.
But
area.
I think what most people would tell you is hogwash, that there's no difference, that that all maple syrup is the same. Well, we have this. We not only have this tasting panel, we also have a group of scientists who've gotten together.
This is I thought really the fascinating part of the article is you're not just judging on people's subjective palate. This tastes like this. This tastes like this. There was a scientific
component
study as well.
Well, what we have is we have the scientific component, the tasting panel component, and then some of these guys are geology professors at Middlebury College, and they put the different syrups through what's called, and I don't know what this is, but it's an inductively coupled plasma argon emission spectrometer at Middlebury College.
We were going to get one of those for the restaurant, weren't
we? Yeah, we were, but it cost $5 million. We were going to make cookies with it, but we decided against it. But the machine, which usually analyzes rock, usually analyzes rocks, vaporized the syrup, and then pushed it through a 15,000-degree plasma flame. Quite a pizza you could make or something like that.
Taking about 45 seconds.
That is actually hotter than the surface of the sun.
Yeah.
The vapor then disintegrates into its individual elements, right? And then the machine reads what the elements are. You ready for this? The different syrups made from different kinds of trees consistently had different and consistent quantities of copper, magnesium, calcium, and silica, depending on what kind of soil it was grown on. And so this whole thing, this idea of terroir, of that different things from different parts of the farm, from different parts of the vineyard taste different, it's proven by a spectrometer.
But doesn't that make sense? I mean, doesn't it make sense? I mean, we know that, you know, different fertilizers will cause things to grow at different rates. We know that you know, it just our own logic that depending on what's in the dirt is going to end up somehow taking place in the vegetable or fruit
our good friend,
or tree that we're using.
Our good friend Paul Hobbs, who is now one of the most famous winemakers on three continents, and he makes wine in Europe and in Argentina and Chile and also in California, he has always said that his father was a farmer. And he said his father used to say he could taste the difference from a pear grown on one part of the farm versus a pear grown on the other part of the farm. And that's one of the things that got Paul into winemaking. And that's why Paul's wines, and I think great wines from anywhere in the world, have this sense of place. And that speaks a lot to what we talk about all the time, which is eating locally, eating from your local farmers. There are unique sets of tastes that when we buy only from big factory farms, we lose.
Or frankly, now we learn, if you buy from the big maple syrup conglomerate, you're going to lose some of those characteristics.
And this is, you know, it speaks to, look, we want to keep our family farmers on the farm. And what we're trying to do with keeping our family farmers on the farm is one of the ways to do that is what we do, which is to recognize that when we buy tomatoes to make our tomato sauce at Catherine Lombardi Restaurant from Ben Canapaki's farm, that they have a specific taste. And you know what? Yes, it's a great taste, but it's not even necessarily that you're looking for this farm is better than that farm. It's that there's a difference, and that's part of the richness of food. That's what brings us together as a community, and that's what keeps our family
farmers
on the farm.
Some of that difference that we're talking about is, you know, why don't we use California plum tomatoes instead of Jersey plum tomatoes? Some of that difference is regional, but some of that difference is even more specific than regional. It's more specific than just the difference between a Jersey tomato and a California table. It's a difference between this farm and that farm.
Well, I think we're talking about the basic fundamental parts of what is the richness of life and what brings us together at the table. We're going to talk more with that about Dana Cowan, the editor-in-chief of Food & Wine magazine, about 100 tastes you must try in 2007. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Captain Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. Our guest today is Dana Cowan. She is the editor-in-chief of Food & Wine magazine. We love Food & Wine magazine, but the current issue is an absolutely must-read. It's a culinary guide for the year detailing 100 tastes you need to try in the coming year.
Dana Cowan, welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Dana, I read once where you wrote that a lot of people have a job envy over your job as the editor-in-chief of Food & Wine magazine. Is that true?
You know, it happens to me all the time. I meet someone and they say, you have the perfect job. And, I actually can't debate that. I agree with them. I spend my days eating food from the test kitchen, going out to restaurants, looking at really beautiful photographs, coming up with story ideas, working with a fantastic, fantastic group of people. I have the perfect job.
And no deadlines or pressure.
Yeah.
You know what? That's what happens when you're at the top. I don't have deadlines. Other people do.
Right, you hold other people accountable.
You create deadlines.
You know, it's funny. Every once in a while, I'll get cocky and think about that about myself in the restaurants we own, and then it'll be like August, and I'm like, sewage ejector pump is down, and the plumber can't get here for 2 days. And then I got a wrench on, I got overalls, and I'm thinking...
And those boots that I thought I had put away forever.
I'm down there in August thinking, CEO of my own company, that's what I am. Now, this particular issue of Food and Wine magazine is pretty cool. It's 100 tastes that you need to try in the coming year. Now, how did you come up with the 100 things to do? Is it these are trends that you see that have existed over the last year or so that you just think you're projecting where we're going to go? Or is it that all the advanced information with all the stuff people send you? I mean, I know as a restaurant guys, we get people send us press releases about everything. What is it? How did you come up with the 100 tastes that somebody has to try in 2007?
You know what's interesting? It was not as difficult as I thought. We came up with this idea in a sort of brainstorming meeting, and then I stepped back and said, you know, that could be awfully difficult. But it turns out that we looked at the universe of what we cover in the magazine. So we looked at, for example, cookbooks, and we said, what cookbooks are coming up in 2007. Let's test those cookbooks, and then let's give readers a recipe from that book.
Mm-hmm.
We looked at all the restaurant openings that we expected, that we had been told about by publicists or underground sources, and we went to those chefs and said, listen, can we get an advanced, you know, peek at some of the recipes, and can we try those? Some things would have come up in shows for ingredients. For example, we've been tracking Greek ingredients for probably 2 years. You're saying, does any of this go back at all? Well, we have been tracking Greek ingredients, but there seems to be a new surge. And in terms of the Greek things, for example, you know, we've seen the Greek olive oil. We've seen a little bit of amazing feta and cheese coming out of Greece. But it was sort of everything coming together that in 07 you have to try it all together.
Mm-hmm.
Incredible Greek restaurants, incredible Greek wines.
Yeah.
And, you know, in addition to sort of the packaged foods. So sometimes there's been a slow build for a trend, but we feel like in 07 it's all going to come together and it's going to be incredibly exciting for your palate. And that was, you know, the case with Greece.
Dana, it seems like us, whenever we have to do something like this, Francis and I put some, you know, a list or something else together, the hard part isn't finding the things. The hard part is winnowing down the things that you'd like to put in, but you don't have space
for.
Yeah,
let me pose this as a question to you. I mean, Mark and I find that, you know, and this was reinforced recently. I did some Christmas shopping, and I spent the day shopping, and I realized there's a bunch of garbage out there. And I think what your job is here, and why I like your list, is do you think it's hard for people with so much out there, so much overload out there, so many products that people are hawking and pushing and making available, and so many venues, whether they be magazines or on television or crap lousy talk shows on the radio like this one, that to give people so much information about food that it's hard for the consumer to find quality as opposed to just something that somebody's hawking?
Well, I think that one of the roles of an editor is to take that vast, vast world of possibility and bring it down to, you know, three extraordinary things. So, yeah, I think that you can go out there, and I look at, you know, the food shelves at those teeny little grocery stores where everything seems so refined and so perfect, and everything, it practically sparkles, it practically, you know, speaks to you, buy me, I'm so pretty, I'm going to taste good. And, you know, you buy it and then you're disappointed. I don't want any of our readers to ever have that experience.
Mm-hmm.
So we try, you know, dozens of honeys, let's say, to find the perfect honey. We're actually joking that, you know, we could do a new honey, a new chocolate, a new sausage, you know, a new vanilla every single month. Like, there are certain things, a new jam, there's like 8 items where there's such a profusion and there's actually excellent quality.
Yeah, they're everywhere.
They are everywhere, and you really need to help people sort through them. So that was definitely part of the list with, you know, trying to send people to great ingredients.
So, Dana, what you're saying is that Francis and I actually need an editor.
That's perhaps really... you do. I was actually in the reverse. I was giving you credit for being editors yourselves because, you know, in doing a show, you obviously pick the people you have on. That's your own way of editing the world.
Well, you know what's funny is we actually did a show that was very much had where we used this. I think being a restaurateur is a similar kind of thing now that I think about it, where you're picking great stuff and you're very self-consciously not picking other stuff that may look good on paper but not be great in reality. Well, we're going to come back in just a moment and talk a little bit more with Dana Cowan of Food & Wine Magazine. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1125.
Let me talk to you about lighting, and specifically about how you can enhance the appeal of any space. Lighting is a powerful, emotional, and aesthetic force. It's one of the most important elements of design. More than anything else, it sets the mood and tone for an entire experience. A room pops or it doesn't based on lighting. Lights on 9 is a top-notch commercial and retail lighting supplier. Lights on 9 supplied all the lights for our award-winning Catherine Lombardi restaurant, inside and out, dining room and kitchen. Lights on 9 has everything from tasteful and stylish chandeliers to table and floor lamps to outdoor lighting for illuminating a building or walkway or a sign. At Lights on 9, the service is exemplary, expert, and knowledgeable. They ship anywhere in the continental United States for free. Their retail store is in the Galleria Shopping Center on Route 9 in Manalapan. They're open 7 days a week. Call them at 732-308-9166. That's 732-308-9166. Or visit them at lightson9.com. That's lightson9.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey. And our guest today is Dana Cowan. She is the editor-in-chief, mind you, of Food & Wine Magazine, one of our favorite magazines about food and wine. Their current issue lists 100 tastes you must try this year. It reminds me of one of the shows we did last year. We went to the Fancy Food Show, Dana, Mark and I. And we tried a bunch of lousy stuff and made fun of it on the air. That was the only time we got to talk about the other stuff. Usually it's we find the five good things, and that's what we talk about.
We titled that show the Fancy Schmancy Food, food Show.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that's...
needed a guide. You needed a guide to take you. There is some great stuff to be found there.
Oh, we agree, but we didn't want to talk about those things. Yeah, we wanted to talk about the other things.
It was more fun.
It
was more fun to make fun of the stuff that really wasn't very good. Now... You also talk about restaurants that are looking like they're going to open. Gordon Ramsay has come to the United States. He's the chef who had that famous television show where he screamed at everybody. He made your list. Why did he make your list? I think there are a lot of people waiting to try his food, and there are a lot of people waiting to punch him in the nose. Which, I mean, are they both, you know, how did he make your list?
I think that one of the reasons we wrote about Gordon's arrival in New York is, of course, he has... a worldwide empire. I mean, he has a place in Dubai. One of his accolades, Angel Hartnett, is in Florida. He has so many restaurants in London. He's an international superstar, and yet he has not cooked in America yet. And we wanted to mark that occasion. He also is going to open a restaurant in L.A., so there's future news. And beyond that, he's also going to make a TV show in America in February that mimics the show that he did in London called Kitchen Nightmares.
And that one's not going to make me as mad as the one that's on TV right
this
now.
This is the show that Gordon watchers like. Mm-hmm. You know, people find Hell's Kitchen very, you know, amusing and all of that, but this other show they find a little more endearing.
Can I tell you that in Hell's Kitchen there's a lot of pent up, like a lot of people looking at Gordon Ramsay because I think that screaming chef that he portrays there, maybe that's just a persona. I hope for his sake that it is. But it's engendered a lot of people looking at him askance. Like New York Magazine ran an issue just last week like criticizing his choice of chef jacket.
Right, that style of chef is over as far as we're concerned here in the United States. So I'm wondering how he's going to be received.
I'm curious to see how that's going to go down. Dana, we're going to go to the news, and then I hope you'll stay with us and come back on the other side of the news and talk about some of the other 100 things that people have to taste in 2007.
Absolutely.
Excellent. Dana Cowan, editor-in-chief of Food & Wine Magazine, coming back with us again after the news. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1130.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Today we're talking with Dana Cowan. She's the editor-in-chief of Food & Wine magazine, one of our favorite foodie publications. Their current issue has 100 tastes you must try in 2007. It's a great issue, and I recommend picking it up. And if you don't know how to get Food & Wine magazine, you can link to it on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. We'll throw it up there. Now, Dana, I want to talk about a few of the things that you put on as tastes you must try in 2007. Some of the things that you talk about either are illegal and will soon be legal, or were until recently illegal and are now legal. Can we talk about some of those things?
Sure. I mean, one of the things that I'm waiting with bated breath for, and I know it sounds a little silly, but it's this darn Iberico ham.
Oh, it doesn't sound silly to us.
We've got $400. We've got two hams on. We got deposits on two hams.
You do?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, you're my kind of guy. So I like, you know, pork products, any kind of pork products, and everybody who knows.
You're my kind of girl.
Anybody who knows anything says that this is the best ham in the world, and I love it when they say that the fat around the ham is so snowy white that it's actually good for you.
Have you never had ham on Iberico?
I mean, I really haven't.
The beauty of ham on Iberico is that it almost melts at room temperature, the fat on the ham.
Hey, guys, Foodie Caucus here. We should fill in the listening audience as to what the heck we're talking about. We're on the radio. Okay, everybody out there in listener land, there is this famous kind of ham in Spain called jamón ibérico, which is made from the pata negra pigs, which is the blackfoot pigs, which dine primarily on acorns, depending on the season, which has heretofore not been available in the United States.
These pigs have not been able to be imported, and we're beginning to get some of the products that don't have to be aged as long as ham in Iberico. We're getting chorizo and things like that are from these pigs are available, but the Iberico ham needs to be aged for a couple of years.
And it just became legal to import meat from Spain about a year ago, and so it's going to take another. We'll see in 2007 or early 2008. We'll see the jamón ibéricos, which are hung out to dry in the mountain breeze. And when you have jamón ibérico, the fat, it's a different kind of fat, and it's full of omega-3s. And it also, if you're in a cafe in Spain and they bring out the jamón serrano or the basic ham plates, which are common, the jamón ibérico is like three times as expensive, but you can see it from across the plaza because the fat of that kind of ham, it melts at room temperature, and so it's shiny. It's amazing.
And the beauty of this is, and this like may be my favorite thing in the whole wide world, just because it's actually got fat that's good for you in pork, and what could be better than that?
Yeah, that's what we all hope for, that we are going to discover in 10 years that all pork fat is good for you,
right,
not just this one.
It's like at the end of Sleeper.
It's good for me in that it makes me smile.
It's like, it's like the end of Sleeper, the Woody Allen movie where he finds that the chocolate cake when smoking was good for you. All right. Talk to us of mangosteens. I've only had a smuggled mangosteen once.
I think that there are a bunch of mangosteens here, but, you know, those are also incredibly healthy fruits. They've got, you know, lots of antioxidants. It's sort of like I have a Swedish, tartish flesh, and they're going to be imported from Thailand, where there's tons of mangosteens.
And they have heretofore been illegal in the United States, and it's a new kind of fruit that you can seek to try this year.
Exactly. And you know, I, again, have not had a mangosteen. Now, many chefs say that there's tons of mangosteens here. It's just they're here illegally.
Yeah, exactly.
But that will change. And then another, just such a funny thing, another item that has been illegal that is now legal are wild artichokes.
It's just crazy. Why are wild artichokes illegal?
It's just paperwork and permits. You know, it's not unlike raw milk cheeses, where the government has such a strong opinion on, you know, they believe that raw milk is going to
hurt you.
Yeah, this, by the way, is me telling the government they're wrong again.
It was okay for Moses.
But these wild artichokes have no potential danger for anybody. They just didn't you know, pass through customs the proper way. So they're going to come, and they're just, they're tiny and really delicious.
Well, talk to us about, because raw milk cheeses also made your list. Talk to us about raw milk cheeses. Now, raw milk cheeses formerly were illegal in the United States, and now as long as the cheese is aged 60 days, they're legal. What should people be looking for in raw milk cheeses?
Well, I think the great thing about raw milk cheeses is that they have more flavor because they haven't been pasteurized. That's the difference.
The milk has never been boiled is pretty much what we're saying. Like, and pasteurization is a boiling process.
Exactly. And you know, I would argue that when you boil something, you know, you leach some flavor out with those bubbles that pop in the air. So I am always excited to try a raw milk cheese, and there are some really great examples in the U.S., like Cowgirls Creamery cheese. Have you ever had any of those?
Oh, yeah, of course. They're on a cheese board all the time. And you mentioned in the magazine Bailey Hazen Blue from Jasper Hill.
Another great cheese.
I love their cheese. And then Twig Farm's Goat Tome.
Mm-hmm.
So these are all, you know, they're something you have to try if you've only had, you know, pasteurized cheeses.
We're gonna put on our website, you mentioned in your magazine, FromaggioKitchen.com, which we'll link under this show, and we'll also put you up the link to, we have Terrence Brennan on the show, and we've had Max McCalman on the show. They work at a company called Artisanal, which can ship cheese directly to your home, and we'll put Artisanal's website up as well.
And some of these great cheeses, and fortunately, I think, for everybody, and one of the things that Dana in the magazine has pointed out, you're seeing more and more of these raw milk cheeses, A, being produced, but you're also seeing them on fine cheese boards and fine restaurants, but also in places in good cheese shops where you can purchase them.
Let me ask you, Dana, does Food and Wine, or are you involved at all? And there's a big movement now that's gaining steam that I see. You can buy, I get raw milk from Pennsylvania. I go into Pennsylvania and get raw milk.
Oh, it's great.
Oh, it's amazing.
One of the advantages of being in Jersey.
Yeah, that's right.
Amazing. My sister-in-law has a farm in Montana, and I had raw milk there, and she warned me, like, don't give it to the children because they wouldn't have the enzymes to digest it, but it is incredible. And I know there's a little, I guess it's not underground, but there's raw milk sold, and that's just a great way to drink some milk.
Well, raw milk has really gotten a bad rap, and one of the things that's happened in certainly in Pennsylvania, and I know some of the other states, is what's happened is the raw milk farmers have put kind of such stringent regulations on themselves, and the governments of those states have put such stringent regulations on the raw milk that milk is actually generally has fewer pathogens in it than it would.
I would argue,
pre-pasteurized.
I think Mark and I would argue that raw milk as it's currently produced is healthier. I think. Well, I guess we can't make that argument because we're afraid of getting sued. So we would argue that it's worthwhile. And there's a movement to make raw milk legal in New Jersey. It is legal in Pennsylvania under certain restrictions. And if you want to find out more about it, you can go to the Weston Price Foundation. Go to our website. You can do a show. There's a guy named Dr. Ron Schmidt who's the milk doctor.
He wrote a great raw milk book about raw milk.
Back to what you can try very easily is you can go and try these raw milk cheeses that are a little bit older, that are 60 days old. Let's talk about when we talk about where you go with 100 tastes. Do you think it's more that, are you looking more toward the high and what's going on in fine restaurants, or what's going on the street with cuisine?
Well, I'm interested in absolutely everything. The magazine loves the low as much as the high, and a lot of innovation happens by looking at what's going on in ethnic communities, or, you know, what sort of seasonings are being brought in from someplace like Africa. I mean, a seasoning is neither high nor low,
right?
But its place of origin might be interesting. We like things that seem like a contradiction. Like, one thing that we noted was that the most sort of snobby beer people now find that beer in a can is best.
Mm-hmm.
Now, who would have thought that? I mean, you can just hear the pop of a beer can, and you think of Schlitz. Well, not the case. You know, some of the best beers in the country are now being packaged in cans. Now, we don't really recommend drinking them from the cans. That might disturb the experience. But, so we'll look at that kind of thing seems like a lowbrow, actually is a highbrow.
You know, in the high and the low of things, I'm thinking back to Mark Pascal, owner of two of the best restaurants in Jersey and host of this radio show.
I don't think I'm going to like this story.
And I vaguely remember you smashing a beer can on your head once many years ago. Anyway, we'll come back in just a moment and talk a little bit more with Dana Cowan from Food & Wine Magazine. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:45.
Floors, walls, and lighting. The Restaurant Guys learned long ago that the key to making a space look great are floors, walls, and lighting. There's no tougher test to a carpet than a busy restaurant. From design to installation to cleaning, the Gillespie Group has handled the Restaurant Guys restaurant floors for more than 10 years. Designers know what looks great on the first day. Bob Gillespie knows what will continue to look great year after year. Gillespie doesn't just install carpets. Their quality clean division has experience and expertise to keep that carpet looking great. In our business, it's the details that matter. In your home or office, the details make a lasting impression. The Gillespie Group handles projects from large hotels to offices right down to your living room. Look down. Go on, look down. Right there by your feet. You see. You need the Gillespie Group. Call them at 732-254-5508 or visit them at thegillespiegroup.com. Tell them the Restaurant Guys sent you and get a free cleaning with any installation. Remember, it's Gillespie for carpet and flooring, 732-254-5508.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Captain Lombardi Restaurants. Our guest is Dana Cowan. She is the editor-in-chief of Food & Wine Magazine. We're talking about the 100 tastes you must try in 2007, which is what you'll find when you pick up Food & Wine Magazine. You can check her out at foodandwine.com or go to our website, restaurantguysradio.com, and check it on out. Let's talk about cocktails, Dana. It seems as though you have brown liquors you talk about as being one of the ingredients and one of the ways that cocktails are going away from the vodkas, and you're talking about a cocktail that's made with bourbon infused with apples and cinnamon and vanilla beans. I cheer you and your magazine. What's going on with the cocktails? What's happening to vodka?
Well, you know, I don't think vodka's power will ever diminish, actually, but there is an interest in sort of quirkier and I would say more palate demanding spirits,
mm-hmm.
you know, spirits that are bitter,
mm-hmm.
Or something that's infused. I mean, usually the infusions have been in vodka, as you would say. You know, we're all the way to quince. I mean, it's, you know, we've gone from, started with apple, we're back at quince. But
that's almost full circle.
Almost, right? We need a infused with, what's the Z? But we're seeing infused bourbons. We're also seeing a lot of vermouth drinks. We're seeing restaurants that are making their own sodas and colas, which I applaud because you can obviously control the quality so much more. And what you mix your drink with is as important as the original spirit.
Let's talk about that for a moment because I think that is a huge and important trend. It's something we've done in our one restaurant. We don't have a very strong cocktail program, but in our Italian American restaurant, we have a very strong cocktail program. And we found, we opened about a year and a half ago, that you know, these old-fashioned drinks that we were trying to resurrect called for grenadine. Well, if you use the commercial grenadine that's available today made with corn syrup and artificial flavor,
it just tastes like corn syrup.
It makes a ridiculously awful drink. So,
good color, though.
Right. The color was right, and that's about it. But we're seeing a lot of people making their own tonic, making their own bitters, making their own grenadine, making their own and using vodka, oddly, to make this is the latest thing we see, to make what do they call them? Tinctures. Which
uh-huh.
are just one-note wonders, like either a clove tincture or an allspice tincture. Or
just a drink finisher, as it were.
To make a single ingredient. Now, so we're seeing a move back to adult liquors that taste like liquor or cocktails that use brown whiskeys that taste the taste of whiskey. The other thing you point to is the rise of mocktails.
Right. I think that if you really want to know if a bar chef knows their stuff, ask them to make you a really fantastic drink that has no alcohol.
Yeah.
Because that's when a little finesse comes into play. You know, you're looking for flavor and you're looking for, you know, in snotty food worlds, you know, a little complexity. I mean, something that's not just a glass of orange juice.
Yeah.
And you'll also get to see the quality of their ingredients there.
Exactly.
Because they if you don't have good mixers, if you don't have good ingredients to mix into your cocktails, then your mocktails will taste even worse.
Well, and we were talking with Paul, who's the
Paul Roberts,
who's the master sommelier who runs Thomas Keller's whole wine operation for all of his restaurants, and he was talking about the rise of cocktails and their role in a restaurant. You know, if you have a group of people and one that person doesn't drink, the tasting menu paired with wine that the other eight people are doing becomes pretty boring to that one person who may not drink. And he said he found that they're very appreciative, and then we have found a similar kind of thing. If they have a different, interesting, complex adult beverage that doesn't have alcohol with each wine, and I think in a society where we need designated drivers and we need to be careful, right, that's very important.
I agree with you, and I think that, I think about Jean-Georges' restaurant and Trump Tower. They have just unbelievably delicious, inventive, creative. You can call them mocktails. You can just call them, fruity drinks.
Can you think of one off the top of your head?
Well, there's one that has a lemongrass, and then an acid, and then a little honey, and then a soda.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fabulous. And interestingly, in most of those Jean-Georges drinks, it hits many of the notes that Jean-Georges likes to hit in his food.
Sure, sure.
So, it's not as though one is divorced from the other. You're still trying to put flavors together.
And remember that Jean-Georges is never going to use high fructose corn syrup in any of his food. So you wouldn't expect to see it in any of his cocktails either.
True enough.
Well, and that's the problem with when you're making a cocktail, let's say, calls for ginger ale or calls for a tonic. Although I have to say Schweppes, for some reason, works pretty well as far as a tonic that uses high fructose corn syrup. But almost any other soda without the high fructose corn syrup, and you're seeing more and more brands of soda like Boylan's,
mm-hmm,
yeah,
removing high fructose corn syrup and touting that on the label. And I think that's something to really be commended.
I mean, that's an enormous trend that we've seen, is the rise of fantastic bottled soda. So we've been talking about at the restaurant and the restaurateurs taking it on themselves. That makes sense. But what I really applaud is the fact that, there's shelf space in supermarkets for something like Boylan's and local versions, because often those don't, make it past a state boundary. They're mm-hmm. done in small quantity. And so your options for something that's, quote unquote, a soft drink, have improved immeasurably.
And that comes from you out there listening to shows like this and being concerned about what you eat and what you drink, and not only what's healthy, but also what tastes good. And you're demanding sodas that don't leave you with that cloying, sticky feeling.
And what you're
and
finding
you're changing
is,
that.
And what you're finding is the two things are the same. What's healthy and what tastes good is very frequently aligned.
Except with pork.
Not always. Sometimes with pork, even so.
Yeah.
That's right.
How many
Benico? There you are.
Hey, Dana, thanks for being on the show with us. We know you're very busy. I appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule.
Thanks. It was great to be with you guys.
Thanks so much, Dana.
Okay. Bye-bye.
So, that's Dana Cowan from Food & Wine Magazine. Pick it up on the stands, foodandwine.com, one of the magazines you should really subscribe to if you want to be in the know. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:55. Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Captain Lombardi Restaurants. We're talking with Dana Cowan, the editor-in-chief of Food & Wine Magazine, about the 100 tastes you must try this year. One thing we really didn't get to talk about.
You know what, Francis?
What?
As we get closer to the top of the hour, you talk faster.
I'm rushing for lunch. No, we were talking about the 100 things we didn't get to spend a lot of time, and she said that all things Greek are coming in. We had a Greek wine section on our wine list. We established a Greek wine section on our wine list because of some amazing wines that were coming out of there, and I want to recommend one to
you. That's a great idea.
There's a Greek producer called Gaia.
G-A-I-A.
How about we put it up on the website and we'll check this out?
G-A-I-A, I'm sure.
But it's pronounced Gaia, which is not to be confused with Angelo Gaia, who is a very famous Barbaresco producer in Italy. But the Gaia wines, there's a grape, if you're wondering why they're not rocketing to popularity,
it's because some of the letters face the wrong way,
yes,
Francis. That's why.
But Gaia makes a wine called an Aiorhitiko, which I'm not even going to try to spell because, as difficult as it is to say,
I'm not even going to try and say it. Okay, so.
But Gaia Aiorhitiko, you can find out there. And it's pretty darn
really
good.
Really delicious.
Oh,
I mean, if you like kind of those big, juicy, fruit-forward wines but that have complexity behind them, I mean, this is really a terrific wine.
And quite age-worthy.
And the other thing you'll find when you go to these wine areas that are lesser known is you'll find higher quality wines for less money than you will when, you know, if it says California and it says Cabernet Sauvignon, there's a premium that you pay for that.
I'll also point out that the other trend that they mentioned sort of in passing is kind of a fun one, but I see it everywhere, including in our own area.
Including when you go to your own restaurant.
Homemade marshmallows.
Yeah.
Either whether savory or sweet, people are making their own marshmallows, again, out of sugar, not high fructose corn syrup. Pretty awesome stuff. I was at Jacques Torres in Manhattan, which is the famous chocolatier in Manhattan, the other day, and he had some homemade marshmallows that were like 15 cents a piece.
Come on.
Pretty good.
What's better than that?
Pretty
Come
good.
On.
Girl Scout, but give me a s'more.
We talked about fancy schmancy food. Homemade marshmallows, easy to make, delicious.
A little bit of Jacques Torres chocolate, a little bit of marshmallow, a little bit of graham cracker.
I'm sorry, Jacques Torres, expensive to buy, delicious.
That's why I got no kids. I get less chocolate, but better. Anyway, I hope you've enjoyed the hour with the Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are the Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.